Chapter 9, 191. From Adrazonte, the caravan headed into the pitiless expanse known in Varadesh as the Low Barrens, and to the nomads as the Sands That Slay. Its reputation was well-founded, a 4,000-kilometer sink of pressure and heat and scouring winds that was virtually impassable for three-quarters of the year. The oldest myths from the age before told of hidden cities and a fall of stars that had created the terrible wilderness. Beasts roamed abroad, that was certain, and beneath the sands even more terrifying apparitions and denizens awaited the bold or foolish. None were held in more awe than the Kingworm, an embodiment of destruction. Many living within the Sands That Slay worshipped as a demigod, an incarnation of the powers. The spawn of the Kingworm had spread far and wide through the Low Barrens, preying on the unwary and desperate that strayed into the territories. Tradition held that none passed into the Low Barrens after the Feast of Lamentation, yet it had been 3 days since that observance, and still Corpheron, determined to avoid the slightest contact with any others that might relay the secret of Lorgar to the cities, pressed his caravan along the remains of the old highways into the continent-spanning desolation. None dared voice their dismay, for to raise complaint against the messenger of the powers in such a terrible place was to invite disaster. Sacrifices and prayers were conducted with greater zeal than at any previous time in Corpheron's exile, with preacher, acolyte, converts, and slaves all bending both their will and their faith to surviving the trials the elements threw against them. And it seemed as though such dedication was rewarded. For wake-rise after wake-rise, rest-eve after rest-eve, the storms held abated, as though allowing the followers of Corpheron to progress. Even the weathered desert veterans amongst Axata's warriors, those from the declined tribes of the inner ranges, remarked at this incredible progress. Surely it was a mark of their master's favour in the eyes of the powers that his people traversed the worst of Colchis's wilds unmolested. Still, they did not take their duties lightly, and so it was that when, on a terrible morn day, the tempests finally fell upon the sands and engulfed the temple rig and its escorts, the crews and slaves were well prepared. Sand shields and windbreaks were erected swiftly. Knowing that any desultory response could prove fatal for them all, Corpheron relented in his prohibition to Lorgar not to labour. With the aid of the extraordinary youth, the defences were erected in half the time of any previous attempt. Corpheron joined the work gangs in person, pulling at cables and lifting beams with the others, in what seemed a selfless act for the group. 192. Nairo was not so convinced of the master's altruism, and after all was made ready and the congregation assembled below decks and under their storm shelters, he confided his worries to Lorgar.
"He sees how easy you are with others, and is jealous,"
Nairo told the boy when they settled below for the wake main break, when the heat was at its most vicious, and even one's soul was scorched despite the shade above. He knew he had to speak carefully, for as much as Lorgar was comfortable among the converts and slaves, he was still the acolyte of the master. To speak of Corpheron's tyranny, to lament his beliefs directly would be to speak against the word and the truth, concepts in which Lorgar was fully invested, despite his suffering under those convictions.
"He worries that you are too popular, and tries to usurp some of your manner to himself. He saw how we regarded you when you worked alongside us, and stoops to emulate your labours."
"I would think you had a point," replied Lorgar, only the glint of his eyes visible in the dark confines of the below deck, "if you had argued that he laboured for self-preservation."
"I do, but not against the storms," said Nairo.
He caught the sharp intake of breath from Lorgar, and thought he had perhaps dared too much. He took a subtler route to his point than he had intended.
"I remember the works of the acolytes lift up the master. So it is said in the Revelations."
A rejoinder to the accusation that Narag adorned her own reputation with the efforts of Diomada and Kalipa, meaning that it is to the credit of the master that a pupil achieves high renown. Nairo could feel the satisfaction emanating from Lorgar. Not smugness, simply a gladness that radiated whenever the youth engaged in theological and scriptural debate. Cor Faeron's elevation by my efforts in no way diminishes my achievements.
If he builds upon them as a foundation, you are right, countered Nairo.
He licked his lips. Even in the depths of the temple rig, the dust and grains penetrated, and all was coated with a fine layer of red and grey.
If he seeks to name your tower as his home, it is a theft. All people should own what they create, to their credit or downfall equally.
Lorgar did not reply at first, and Nairo took heart that the acolyte was turning proper thought upon the subject, rather than reeling off some trite counterpoint from the texts. He could feel the boy shift his bulk. He had grown almost as tall as the slave, his rapid growth showing no sign of abating. The meagre rations afforded to even a convert were no match for an appetite that could fuel such development, and Cor Faeron had demanded that the crew and slaves give up a portion of their own meals to supplement the boy's allotment. It was a testament to Lorgar's character that such donations were given without resentment, even if it left many hungry. In truth, the slaves had already been on such short rations that they had managed their meals, ensuring that none among their number went too hungry, and that each had equal time without. 193.
Am I not a creation of Cor Faeron? Lorgar said eventually.
With his growing size, his voice had deepened and become richer, and it was clear he was passing through his adolescence, even though 20 days earlier he had been no more than an infant.
His wisdom, zeal, and teachings have made me. It is equally a crime to attribute to a mortal that which has been rendered by the powers,
Nairo stated firmly, pleased to be able to quote Cor Faeron's doctrines against the master's good.
You have unique gifts. We all know this. The powers instilled in you some fate greater than that of any mortal. Many will try to turn you into their tool for their own ends, but you must stay true to the will of the powers. In that, only you can be the arbiter of the truth.
Lorgar's reply was softly spoken, but even in his quiet tone there was hidden a barb of interrogation.
And what would the end be, Nairo, to which you would turn me?
The slave felt stripped bare by the question, any accusation unspoken but no less penetrating for it. Such was the irrepressible nature of Lorgar that he could not avoid the question, nor lie in answer to it.
I would have all men and women on Colchis be free, Lorgar, he said, the words dragged forth from his lips.
He quickly added,
if the powers desire it.
For what seemed an eternity, Lorgar did not reply, and had it not been for his slow breathing, Nairo would have thought the youth had slipped away. It made the slave flinch when finally Lorgar laid a broad hand on his leg and spoke.
I hear you, he said simply. We shall learn if the powers hear you also.
And from this Nairo took comfort, until he later thought about the words some more. Then he did not. For in his mind, only a fool willingly drew the attention of the powers.